31. The rain was falling in sheets, threatening to turn the circle within the stones into a sea of mud.
"Hold something over the door," Eddie shouted. "Don't let the rain wash it out."
Roland snatched a glance at Susanna and saw she was still struggling with the demon. Her eyes were half shut, her mouth pulled down in a harsh grimace. He could not see or hear the demon, but he could sense its angry, frightened thrashings. Eddie turned his streaming face toward him. "Did you hear me?" he shouted. "Get something over the goddamn door and do it now!" Roland yanked one of their hides from his pack and held a corner in each hand. Then he stretched his arms out and leaned over Eddie, creating a makeshift tent. The tip of Eddie's homemade pencil was caked with mud. He wiped it across his arm, leaving a smear the color of bitter chocolate, then wrapped his fist around the stick again and bent over his drawing. It was not exactly the same size as the door on Jake's side of the barrier. The ratio was perhaps 0.75 to 1, but it would be big enough for Jake to come through, if the keys worked.
"If he even has a key, isn't that what you mean?" he asked himself. "Suppose he's dropped it. Or that house made him drop it."
He drew a plate under the circle which represented the doorknob, hesitated, and then squiggled the familiar shape of a keyhole within it. He hesitated. There was one more thing. But what? It was hard to think of, because it felt as if there were a tornado roaring through his head, a tornado with random thoughts flipping around inside it, instead of uprooted barns and privies and chicken houses.
"Come on, sugar!" Susanna cried from behind him. "You weakening on me. What's the matter? I thought you was some kind of hot shit stud boy."
Boy. That was it. Carefully, he wrote "the boy" across the top panel of the door with the tip of his stick. At the instant he finished the Y, the drawing changed. The circle of rain-darkened earth he had drawn suddenly darkened even more and pushed up from the ground, becoming a dark, gleaming knob. And instead of brown, wet earth within the shape of the keyhole, he could see dim light. Behind him, Susanna shrieked at the demon again, urging it on, but now she sounded as if she were tiring. This had to end, and soon. Eddie bent forward from the waist like a Muslim saluting Allah and put his eye to the keyhole he had drawn. He looked through it into his own world, into that house which he and Henry had gone to see in May of 1977, unaware, except he, Eddie, had not been unaware, no, not totally unaware, even then, that a boy from another part of the city was following them. He saw a hallway. Jake was down on his hands and knees, tugging frantically at a board. Something was coming for him. Eddie could see it, but at the same time he could not. It was as if part of his brain refused to see it, as if seeing would lead to comprehension, and comprehension to madness.
"Hurry up, Jake!" he screamed into the keyhole. "For Christ's sake, move it!"
Above the speaking ring, thunder ripped the sky like cannon fire, and the rain turned to hail. 32. For a moment after the key fell, Jake only stood where he was, staring down at the narrow crack between the boards. Incredibly, he felt sleepy.
"That shouldn't have happened," he thought. "It's one thing too much. I can't go on with this. Not one minute, not one single second longer. I'm going to curl up against that door instead. I'm going to go to sleep right away, all at once. And when it grabs me and pulls me toward its mouth, I'll never wake up."
Then the thing coming out of the wall grunted, and when Jake looked up, his urge to give in vanished in a single stroke of terror. Now it was all the way out of the wall, a giant plaster head with one broken wooden eye and one reaching plaster hand. Chunks of lathing stood out on its skull in random hackles like a child's drawing of hair. It saw Jake and opened its mouth, revealing jagged wooden teeth. It grunted again. Plaster dust drifted out of its yawning mouth like cigar smoke. Jake fell to his knees and peered into the crack. The key was a small, brave shimmer of silvery light down there in the dark, but the crack was far too narrow to admit his fingers. He seized one of the boards and yanked with all his might. The nails which held it groaned, but held. There was a jangling crash. He looked down the hallway and saw the hand, which was bigger than his whole body, seize the fallen chandelier and throw it aside.
The rusty chain, which had once held it suspended, rose like a bullwhip and then came down with a heavy crump. A dead lamp on a rusty chain rattled above Jake, dirty glass chattering against ancient brass. The doorkeeper's head, attached only to its single hunched shoulder and reaching arm, slid forward above the floor. Behind it, the remains of the wall collapsed in a cloud of dust. A moment later, the fragments humped up and became the creature's twisted, bony back. The doorkeeper saw Jake looking and seemed to grin. As it did, splinters of wood poked out of its wrinkling cheeks. It dragged itself forward through the dust-hazed ballroom, mouth opening and closing. Its great hand groped amid the ruins, feeling for purchase, and ripped one of the French doors at the end of the hall from its track. Jake screamed breathlessly and began to wrench at the board again. It wouldn't come. But the gunslinger's voice did. "The other one, Jake. Try the other one." He let go of the board he had been yanking at and grabbed the one on the other side of the crack. As he did, another voice spoke. He heard this one not in his head but with his ears and understood it was coming from the other side of the door he had been looking for ever since the day he hadn't been run over in the street. "Hurry up, Jake! For Christ's sake, hurry up!" When he yanked this other board, it came free so easily that he almost tumbled over backward. 33. Two women were standing in the doorway of the used appliance shop across the street from the mansion. The older was the proprietor. The younger had been her only customer when the sounds of crashing walls and breaking beams began. Now, without knowing they were doing it, they linked arms about each other's waists and stood that way, trembling like children who hear a noise in the dark. Up the street, a trio of boys on their way to the Dutch Hill Little League field stood, gaping at the house, their red ball flyer wagon filled with baseball equipment forgotten behind them. A delivery driver nosed his van into the curb and got out to look. The patrons of Henry's Corner Market and the Dutch Hill Pub came straggling up the street, looking around wildly. Now the ground began to tremble, and a fan of fine cracks started to spread across Reinhold Street.
"Is it an earthquake?"
the delivery van driver shouted at the women standing outside the appliance shop. But instead of waiting for an answer, he jumped back behind the wheel of his van and drove away rapidly, swerving to the wrong side of the street to keep away from the ruined house, which was the epicenter of this convulsion. The entire house seemed to be bowing inward. Boards splintered, jumped off its face, and rained down into the yard. Dirty, gray-black waterfalls of slate shingles poured down from the eaves. There was an ear-splitting bang, and a long, zigzagging crack shot down the center of the mansion. The door disappeared into it, and then the whole house began to swallow itself from the outside in. The younger woman suddenly broke the older one's grip.
"I'm getting out of here,"
she said, and began to run up the street without looking back. 34. A hot, strange wind began to sigh down the hallway, blowing Jake's sweaty hair back from his brow as his fingers closed over the silver key. He now understood, on some instinctive level, what this place was and what was happening. The doorkeeper was not just in the house. It was the house. Every board, every shingle, every windowsill, every eave. And now it was pushing forward, becoming some crazily jumbled representation of its true shape as it did. It meant to catch him before he could use the key. Beyond the giant white head and the crooked, hulking shoulder, he could see boards and shingles and wire and bits of glass, even the front door and the broken banister, flying up the main hall and into the ballroom, joining the form which bulked there, creating more and more of the misshapen plaster man that was even now groping toward him with its freakish hand. Jake yanked his own hand out of the hole in the floor and saw it was covered with huge, trundling beetles. He slapped it against the wall to knock them off and cried out as the wall first opened and then tried to close around his wrist. He yanked his hand free just in time, whirled, and jammed the silver key into the hole in the plate.
The plaster man roared again, but its voice was momentarily drowned out by a harmonic shout which Jake recognized. He had heard it in the vacant lot, but it had been quiet then, perhaps dreaming. Now it was an unequivocal cry of triumph. That sense of certainty, overwhelming, inarguable, filled him again, and this time he felt sure there would be no disappointment. He heard all the affirmation he needed in that voice. It was the voice of the rose. The dim light in the hallway was blotted out as the plaster hand tore away the other French door and squeezed into the corridor. The face socked itself into the opening above the hand, peering at Jake. The plaster fingers crawled toward him like the legs of a huge spider. Jake turned the key and felt a sudden surge of power rush up his arm. He heard a heavy, muffled thump as the locked bolt inside withdrew. He seized the knob, turned it, and yanked the door open. It swung wide. Jake cried out in confused horror as he saw what lay behind. The doorway was blocked with earth from top to bottom and side to side. Roots poked out like bunches of wire. Worms, seeming as confused as Jake was himself, crawled hither and thither on the door-shaped pack of dirt. Some dived back into it, others only went on crawling about, as if wondering where the earth which had been below them a moment ago had gone. One dropped onto Jake's sneaker. The keyhole shape remained for a moment, shedding a spot of misty white light on Jake's shirt. Beyond it, so close, so out of reach, he could hear rain and a muffled boom of thunder across an open sky. Then the keyhole shape was also blotted out, and gigantic plaster fingers curled around Jake's lower leg. 35. Eddie did not feel the sting of the hail as Roland dropped the hide, got to his feet, and ran to where Susanna lay. The gunslinger grabbed her beneath the arms and dragged her, as gently and carefully as he could, across to where Eddie crouched. "Let it go when I tell you, Susanna," Roland shouted. "Do you understand? When I tell you!" Eddie saw and heard none of this. He heard only Jake screaming faintly on the other side of the door. The time had come to use the key. He pulled it out of his shirt and slid it into the keyhole he had drawn. He tried to turn it. The key would not turn. Not so much as a millimeter. Eddie lifted his face to the pelting hail, oblivious to the ice balls which struck his forehead and cheeks and lips, leaving welts and red blotches. "No!" he howled. "Oh, God, please, no!" But there was no answer from God. Only another crash of thunder and a streak of lightning across a sky now filled with racing clouds.